This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana Friday Politics, and we're pleased to have the great audience from WWNO in New Orleans Public Radio joining the audience from WRKF in South Central Louisiana. And of course, we are based in Baton Rouge, the center of the universe when it comes to Louisiana politics, and we are 29 weeks and one day away from the October 14th primary. Signature support for our program is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Your number is 877-217-5757, and emails go to talk@talklouisiana.org. Robin Dow is producing, and our leadoff guest is Foster Campbell, Jr., the Public Service Commissioner from North Louisiana, the chair of the PSC. Foster Campbell has served in his capacity as a PSC member for 21 years, and prior to that, he served for 27 years in the Louisiana Senate. So he is one of the most enduring politicos in the country, not only in Louisiana, but in the United States. And he is still around, inducted in the Louisiana Political Hall of Fame in 2009. And his fellow honoree, who just was inducted this year, Ben Baggert, calls Foster Campbell the best stump speaker in the history of Louisiana, including Huey and Earl Long. And good morning to you, Commissioner Campbell. All right, I think we've got him on the line. So, Robin, let's see if we'll make sure Foster is there and that we're able to hear him, most importantly. But Foster Campbell is involved in regulatory matters, as we know, and utility bills have been going up, and that is a concern for people in our state. Inflation has certainly hit us in that area. And before we get to the politics of the day, of which he is an astute observer, what about utility matters and the fact that if you've gotten your bill from Entergy or whichever utility that serves you, you've probably noticed a significant increase. And this is a case in which some people, of course, are hot and bothered by it, and for good reason. And is there anything that can be done? And are there ways to tweak the advantages that utilities have as what some would call monopolies in our state? And Foster Campbell, I think we do have you ready to go now. What about utility bills right now in our state? As I noted, some people are not happy, and is there anything the PSC can do to address it?
Yeah, a lot of people are not happy with them. I got an interesting letter from a lady, a retired school teacher, March the 15th, and she wrapped it up pretty good, talking about police continue to try to fight for a reduction. This is this lady, a retired teacher. She said her energy monthly bill was $220 average for 2020. For 21, it's $261, 22, $267, and for July to March in 23, the average is $343. That's up $100, and you can tell that's a big deal when it's people on a fixed income. $100 a month is a lot. Energy Corporation made $1.1 billion last year, $1.1 billion. Let me tell you something that is shocking to me, and I don't think anyone knows this. When these people have these storms and they cost lots and lots of money, New Orleans, especially Baton Rouge, especially Lake Charles, they cost a lot of money. They don't cost the utility companies one penny, not one red cent. They sum up all the money, and the public service looks at their expenses and makes sure that they're in line. And we floated a bond issue backed by the people of Louisiana. They sold the bonds. Energy got a big fat check for $5 billion. $5 billion laid on their desk. So I have a lot of friends that work out there, work hard when the storms happen, but don't feel so bad for the company. The company, all they lose is the sale of electricity from the time they're out. They get all their money back. They get all their money back.
What can you do as a public service commissioner to address the fact that the utility companies are doing a lot better than the people who they serve, based on what you just told us?
What I'm trying to do and have done, we're trying to see if there's any way, and I think there is. We're going to have some willing members on the public service commission, which we're getting some. to tell them that they ought to have some skin in the game. Right now, I think they ought to, if they got $5 billion back, they ought to put up 10% or 15% toward the damage and not just be scot-free. They say, well, that's unconstitutional, this, that, and the other. But I know how I've heard that excuse every time in the legislature. You need to, like I told them, that's a decision for the courthouse. That's not a decision that we have to make. Just a simple excuse that we don't have to pay it. It's illegal, this, that, and the other. Redo the qualifications to be able for the companies to pay something. But it's ridiculous for them to get all this money. The last three storms, they asked for $5 billion. They got it, and they got a check for $5 billion. Now they're coming back for some more money. It's going to wind up to be about $7 billion. Now here's what that does to the bills. It's going to raise the average consumer that uses about 1,250 kilowatts per hour per month. It's going to average their make their bills go up like $15 a month for 20 years, or 15 years, a lot. And another peeve that I really have, and I hope people in South Louisiana will understand, I represent North Louisiana. I represent everything basically from Alexandria to Arkansas. From the Sabine River to the Mississippi River, just the northern part of the state, if you will, with exception of one parish. These people up here, this is tough to say, but it's a fact, they don't have tornadoes. I mean, they don't have hurricanes. They don't have the damage. But this is tacked onto their bill. They're paying $20 a month or $15 or $17, $18, whatever it is, for 15 years, and they don't have the damage. So I've been telling the companies, look, we need to look at this like insurance companies do. When you live in South Louisiana, your insurance is higher than North Louisiana because of the risk. Well, people are on the electricity, on the grid. That's not the case. You all pay the same bill, even though you don't have the damage in North Louisiana time and time again.
All right.
I get
the picture, and we do have a brief time with you, and I want to hit you on some other topics, but obviously this is a significant one, and nothing is more personal to people than their money, and right now, as we know, a lot of it is going to keep the lights on. But we are 29 weeks away from an election, and in the past, gubernatorial candidates have embraced what you and former Governor Dave Treen proposed, which would be an oil processing fee, and if this were imposed and it were held to be constitutional, it would literally create billions of dollars for the state that perhaps could be used to lower tax burden. And Foster Campbell, so far, no candidate in this race, is calling for an oil processing fee. You have beaten your head against the wall on this for four decades, but why is it not getting any momentum in contemporary Louisiana?
Well, first of all, the legislature is too cozy with the big oil companies. The big oil companies are making billions of dollars. But the legislature, and guarded by lobby is the big oil company's best friend. And lobby has great influence on the people who get elected in the legislature. They wouldn't dare bring it up. It's a real tragedy. Treen was right about it. I've tried to bring it up. As you know, this would be a constitutional amendment. You'd have to change the Constitution in Louisiana to allow you to put taxes on foreign oil, which we could do very easily with a vote of the people. The oil companies don't want that to happen because the people will vote for it overwhelmingly. But the problem is the people in the legislature are too cozy to lobby and too close cozy to the big oil companies to get a fair hearing on it. They know very well how to do this. Oil companies are not going to leave Louisiana. We've got the Mississippi River. We have all the refineries. They need us. And for them to say, well, we'll move to Louisiana, that's not true. No other state wants all this oil refinery. We're one of the dirtiest states in the country with the highest pollution rate. See if you can send that over to Florida. They're on the coast and see what happens. They're not interested in it. North Carolina's not interested in it. But we have a weak legislature, a weak one. That is too beholden to special interest. And if they would try to do this, like Treen tried to do it, like I tried to do it, we would raise billions of dollars a year It would not make gasoline prices go up. That's their excuse. Well, their gas prices will go up. Well, gas prices are everywhere, all over town. Some places in New Orleans, it might be $3.50. Another place, it'll be $4. So there's a lot of gouging going on right now, and that we could stop that. But the truth is, we could raise about $3 to $5 billion a year and get rid of the state income tax. That's what needs to happen. There's a gentleman over there. I don't know, somewhere in Southeast
Richard
Louisiana.
Nelson, and Richard Nelson, the candidate for governor, he wants to get rid of the income tax, but he wants
to... Yeah, but he has no way to do it. He wants to raise the sales tax, or he wants to cut the budget. That doesn't work. Sales tax is punitive. He knows that. But tell Mr. Nelson to look at the big oil companies. If he's got courage and he wants to...
Okay. We do have to take a 90-second pause, and we'll return and have another segment with Foster Campbell after this timeout. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. You're listening to Friday Politics on WRKF and WWNO. Foster Campbell is with us for another segment. Your number is 877-217-5757. We will take a call or two or three, but please be brief. You have to be concise because our time is limited with Commissioner Campbell, and we wanted to hit him on a few different topics, and one of those is payday loans, another one of his passions going back to his days in the legislature. Louisiana has more payday loan centers in our state than we have McDonald's, and these places continue to thrive, and there was a measure to perhaps make them even more profitable that almost cleared all the hurdles until Governor Edwards stepped in after getting encouragement from Foster Campbell to stop it, and he did. But these centers, are they a necessity, especially in dire times, or are they taking advantage of their clients? How do you view it, Commissioner Campbell?
I think payday loan companies remind me of buzzards circling, something that is dying or dead. These people are prey on the people, and they charge outlandish rates. And they wanted even during the session, they were going to raise them even more, the fees. And Governor Edwards rightly vetoed the bill. But payday loan companies in some states, they've run them out of the state, and they greatly regulate them. But not like Louisiana. We have the poorest people, with the exception of Mississippi. And you have a lot of payday loan companies because you have poor people. They flock to where people are hurting, and they charge them more and more and more for interest. You go down the fine parts of town or the fine or the affluent parts of town, you don't see any payday loan companies. Mm-hmm. But go to the poor sections of town, you see them on every corner because that's who they prey on. All the poor, the people who need a loan, and they charge them astronomical rates. And so I would like to see the states free of payday loan companies completely.
All right. Mary in Lafayette, you're on with Commissioner Campbell. Good morning, Mary. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes. My question to you in this most interesting conversation is, has any thought been given to having our utility companies harden their system to avoid some of the cost due to destructive winds, et cetera?
All right. What about improving the infrastructure, Foster Campbell?
I think that's a good idea. We want to make sure they're supposed to keep it up to par anyway, but some of them probably don't. We're looking at that, and they need to keep it up. But understand, a lot of times utility companies, every improvement they do, it costs you. That goes right to the customer. And, we need a good system, but we need to make sure that the system is strong. And if it was strong... the damages wouldn't be as great, but we're working with the Public Service Commissioners looking at different things to make sure that they are resistant. They are resistant.
Right.
A lot of times, if they're not resistant, though, the other side of the story is when it blows down or whatever happens, they put it back up, and their system's better, but the people pay for it. So the bottom line here with utility companies, you really have to regulate them, and you have to know what they're charging is reasonable. And that's the big problem right there. A lot of times the charges maybe not are reasonable, okay, or excessive, and that's what we're about.
Patrick in Innisfail Estates in Baton Rouge. Patrick, you're on with Commissioner Campbell. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, I just know when Trump was president, my electric bills are like half what they are now. I mean, do you think Biden's energy policy? Well, I mean, right after Biden became president, that's when the electricity bills started shooting up.
All right. Is it Joe Biden's fault, Foster Campbell?
I appreciate the question. And no, I don't think that's had anything to do with it. But anyway, we regulate these utility costs, and they have gone up. But a lot of the costs have gone up is because of the price of natural gas. Now, it's gone down now, but you might remember last year, natural gas peaked at $9. And so it's $2 now. So when you buy natural gas to make electricity, that is a big difference right there.
All right.
It was down all during Biden's administration. Natural gas was, Trump, it was low. But natural gas has gone up, and it'll probably go back up. But it's around $2, if I'm not mistaken, now. So you should see a decrease in some of the utility rates because they buy natural gas to make electricity. One thing I can tell you, sir, you appreciate your call. we monitor the price of natural gas, and they can't make a profit on their on the gas they use. If they buy it too, they pass it right on to the customer, but they can't make a profit on that. We do look at that at the Public Service Commission.
Okay. Vincent and Kenner asked a question, and it's a good one regarding this proposal from Representative Marino, who's term limited, so it would not affect him, but he's proposing an increase in legislative pay, a base of $16,800, which is where it's been for 40 years, to $60,000, so huge increase for lawmakers. Governor Edwards has indicated he's open to an increase. I don't know if he's open to one quite like this, but could the governor tie this in with an increase in minimum wage? We're at $7.25 an hour. The state of Arkansas is at $11 an hour. Could the governor do some horse trading on this, Foster Campbell?
He could. I think he could. We probably ought to raise the minimum wage. To Arkansas is a poor state, and here we are, especially up in my area. You got Spring Hill, and you cross the line, you're in Arkansas, or Plain Dealing, you're right across the line. Let me say this, Louisiana raising the minimum wage ought to be done. I don't know the number, but it should be done because the people need it. The next thing is the legislature making $16,000 a year is low. And although I know all the arguments that they don't serve full-time, this, that, and the other, but it does take a lot of time to do a good job as a legislator. I don't know about $60,000. But some raise is justified.
All right.
It is justified.
Phil in Jefferson. Phil, please be concise. You're on with Foster Campbell.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Campbell. I think that Exxon claims that they want to be clean, and yet they are still using water from the Southern Hills Aquifer.
Exxon gets all kinds of tax breaks, and of course, one of the candidates for governor, Stephen Wagespach, didn't like some of the tax breaks that were taken away from them by this administration. Will this be an issue in the governor's race, Foster Campbell?
I was hearing two people there, Jim. Would you repeat your question?
Well, the question was about Exxon using the aquifer in the Baton Rouge area. That's one of the breaks they get. They get, of course, all kinds of industrial tax exemptions. They lost about 20% of their goodies under Governor Edwards, and Stephen Wagespach wants to make them whole again. Who's right, who's wrong?
Oh, I think Governor Wright, I think Governor Edwards is right. Mr. Wagespach works for a large corporation that defends oil companies and all the other big corporations in Louisiana. Mr. Wagespach, I don't know that you could fill him up. I don't know if enough is enough. His theory is if big corporations are happy, the people are happy. I don't see that. I'm on the other side of that question.
Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, please be concise. You're on with Foster Campbell.
Good morning. I'll be real quick, Mr. Campbell. My barber went up from $20 to $25 on a haircut. Is that Joe Biden's fault?
I think we know where he's going with that. Glad you're having some fun with Patrick.
No, I don't think that's his fault.
Roberto in Mid-City, New Orleans. Roberto, you're on with Foster Campbell.
Good morning, sir. I appreciate everything you do. I was just curious to understand who actually owns the infrastructure as far as the electrical system.
Who owns the infrastructure, Foster Campbell?
Well, the infrastructure belongs to Energy or the company that you're using.
Or NOPC or whoever is in control.
WEPCO or CLECO. What?
Okay. 877-217-5757 is your number. We will spend a few more minutes with Commissioner Foster Campbell, and then it's Bob Mann, the longtime Politico who's worked for Bennett Johnston and John Breaux and Russell Long and Kathleen Blanco, now professor of note at LSU. And there's much happening in academia, as we know. And, of course, libraries are under attack in this state. Bob has some thoughts about that. And also some observations about why the recall effort against New Orleans Mayor LaToya Cantrell did not succeed. It was woefully short by 18,000 votes. We're back with more Talk Louisiana after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, now on Fridays for Friday Politics on WWNO in New Orleans, 89.9 New Orleans Public Radio. And we, of course, have been with the listeners at WRKF for this program since March of 2004. So we enjoy not only having the people in the Capital Region listening to us, but also people in New Orleans, which remains the crown jewel of Louisiana. Your number 877-217-5757. Foster Campbell's a cattleman, a farmer, and an insurance magnate in Bossier Parish, but he is fully aware of the prestige of New Orleans. I remember on this show a few years ago, he said, there are about five cities in America people from abroad want to visit, and one of those is New Orleans. Well, Foster Campbell, we're about to segue to Bob Mann. And New Orleans last time basically was the reason why John Bel Edwards was elected governor of Louisiana. He won in Orleans Parish by more than 100,000 votes in a race in which he won overall by 40,000 votes. Do you see a Democrat having a shot in 2023 in the governor's election?
Yeah, I do. Nobody can predict races like this far away. Anything can happen. Anything can happen. As you know, I am a Democrat, and I am not switching. That's just the way I've been all my life. And a lot of things I don't like, but a lot of things I do like. So I'm comfortable right where I am.
Well, I think it would be good politics if Sean Wilson, who right now, until further notice, is the Democrat of choice in the race, would for him to confer with you. Has he made that overture?
Yes, he has. I talked to him. He's a nice gentleman, very, very qualified. And I think he probably makes the runoff, and he has a good chance to win. But who knows, when people make the runoff, first thing you have to do is make the runoff to win. If you don't get in the runoff, you can't win. So if you get in the runoff, anything can happen. Hopefully people look at qualifications, and if they do, then he has a good chance. I don't know the other candidates. I don't know Mr. Wagasback. I don't know Mr. Landry. I mean, I think I've met him, but I don't know him. So I'm looking forward to this governor's race. So I'd like to hear the issues discussed, because there's a lot of issues out there that could help the state of Louisiana. They're controversial, but let's see these candidates step up to the plate and quit worrying about the special interests and start talking about the people's interests. I was talking about Mr. Wagasback a while ago. Well, Mr. Wagasback works for lobby, and lobby works for big oil companies and big corporations. So that troubles me some, that a guy's got that close of connection to lobby, who he worked for, where he got a paycheck, and they work for the big corporations. So can he separate himself from that and get on the people's side? I don't know if he can or not. That's going to be a big step for him to do.
All right. Well, Foster Campbell, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. I'm sorry we couldn't get to all the topics we intended to today, but we'll be calling again soon, and thanks for your many years of public service.
Tell Mr. Mann I said hello. I think my daughter had him as a professor. He's a good teacher. He's a good teacher and a nice fellow. Thank you.
Thank you, Foster Campbell. And Robert Townley Mann is now joining us, the Manship Chair at the LSU Journalism School, now the LSU Manship School of Mass Communication. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Jim.
And before we get to the governor's race, a few days ago, an erudite man in Baton Rouge, a fine lawyer, Barrington Neal, said he heard a rumor that you might be running. Any chance that Robert Townley Mann will be on the ballot October 14th?
No.
Not going to do it.
Not going to do it. No.
But I think you've heard the same rumor. I suppose some people thought you might be a nice candidate.
I think there's some people who I thought were friends of mine who were who I'm now questioning whether they really like me all that much to suggest that I do something like that. So I'm with Foster, and by the way, I want to say thanks to Foster for those kind words and how much I admire him and the work he does on behalf of the people. He's a true servant of the people and been an amazing public servant for a long, long time in the state. And I wish he had been elected governor at some point. But you know, we do not need to go back. And I'm looking forward like him to this governor's race and having some issues discussed, but I'm certainly not going to be part of it in that way.
Well, eight years ago at this time, when Bob was writing a column for the New Orleans Times-Picayune that was a must read for the political class, You wrote in a column that John Bel Edwards needed to get the heck out of the race. All he was going to do is get David Vitter elected governor. Well, and I must admit, you did your mea culpa. You said you were wrong. And your thoughts at that time were thought by many, but not said by many people. But how does it look this time around? I think at this point, and things, of course, can change in 29 weeks, but at this point, there are three major candidates. There's the Democrat Sean Wilson and Republicans Jeff Landry and Stephen Waguespack, and maybe to a lesser degree, John Schroeder and Richard Nelson and Sharon Hewitt, and then Hunter Lundy. But the three biggies are Wilson, Landry, and Waguespack. How do you see it?
Well, I think that's right, and I'm glad you mentioned the column that I did write in 2015, and because of that, I did eat a lot of humble pie, and deservedly so. So I'm hesitant to make predictions about it because some people do forget the week before that I wrote another column saying that David Vitter ought to be very nervous because being the front runner in a governor's race is a very dangerous place to be historically in Louisiana, and that turned out to be the more prescient of the two columns. And I still think that. I think that Jeff Landry is clearly the leader. I think that Sean Wilson is another leader. Maybe I've seen one poll that had Wilson slightly ahead of Landry, but Jeff Landry is I think the acknowledged front runner in this race. And that is not a place I think that it's, you really want to be at this point because you're the target. I think the Republicans like Waguespack and Nelson and Hewitt and Schroeder are going to be going after him. They're not going to be messing with Sean Wilson at this point. And so Landry is going to have to protect that spot. And historically, that's not always the easiest thing to do. It may not prevent him from being in the runoff, but it could make the runoff more difficult for him.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org if you'd like to engage Bob Mann, a seasoned Louisiana politico. And Bob and I are of the same vintage. And this year, we both will be eligible for Medicare. But Bob,
thanks for that reminder.
Well, but by political standards, we're young men based on what's happened. Yeah. And I recall back in the day when your mentor, John Bro, he retired in 2004 and he was 60 years old. And it was like, I'm too old for this. Well, he was just getting started, as it turned out. But the mayor of New Orleans, she dodged a big bullet, and she did so in grand style. And, of course, she's taking her victory lap, and I would too. But these people were trying to run her out of office. They threw a party. They said it had it done, and they weren't even close, Bob. What happened?
Well, first of all, I think we know from experience that recalls are really difficult in Louisiana. It's just a high bar, and it's an even higher bar if you turn in signatures from Disney characters and you're not as organized. I think people were assuming that this organization, that this operation was much better run and better organized. And they certainly claimed to be. And then it just sort of all collapsed like a house of cards when they fell, 18,000 votes signatures short. And it turned out that many of them were were fake signatures. And I think the assumption was always that it may not succeed, but there were other motives involved in this. And I still think that's possible, that it wasn't so much about getting Mayor Cantrell out of office, but perhaps I have friends in New Orleans and New Orleans politics who think that this effort was largely about setting up some voter purges with the governor's race in mind later this year, and they may be right.
Again, 877-217-5757 for Robert Mann, who teaches journalism at LSU. And, of course, academia right now can also and should be a major topic in the governor's election, not only with the interest in libraries. And I see a headline in the Advocate-Picayune today, another Livingston library leader quits, and this is over the book banning that's going on in some libraries across our state. But what about tenure? On the surface, the president of LSU, which of course is the biggest system in Louisiana, William Tate IV, he says he's in favor of tenure, but there are going to be apparently efforts in the legislature to tweak tenure for college professors. Your observations on this?
Yeah, I think there will be, and there certainly were last year. There was a task force to study whether tenure should be continued in this state, and I think President Tate disappointed a lot of people at LSU, faculty and others, and just supporters of higher education across the state by not opposing that effort, in fact, supporting it publicly. It didn't go anywhere, no thanks to him or really other higher education leaders in the state who I think showed very little backbone in opposing it. I think the thing that gives people in higher education the most comfort is we've got a Democratic governor who I believe would not allow anything like this to happen. And that's what, to me, makes the governor's race all the more important for higher education is, are we going to elect someone who sees the worth of a college degree and of strong institutions of higher education? Or are we going to elect someone who sees them as an enemy? And Jeff Landry is someone who clearly, and very proud of the fact that he sees universities like LSU as a detriment to the state, as an enemy, and someone that, something that I think he wants to control as, Governor DeSantis in Florida has done with his own institutions of higher education.
Well, you never know until somebody gets the chair how they will perform, and Jeff Landry could be, as you say, or he could be different. I recall when I was a kid, John McKithen campaigned as a segregationist, but then governed anything but a segregationist. But Ron DeSantis is creating a playbook in Florida that seems to be working around the country for many conservative candidates. We'll talk with Bob about where we are as a nation and a state when we return after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757 for the Friday Politics version, which is heard not only in the Capital Region on WRKF, but in the greater New Orleans area on WWNO. Again, 877-217-5757 for Bob Mann. Steve in St. Francisville. Steve, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes, Bob, I wanted to ask you if you would agree that Mr. Trump and the media have a symbiotic relationship, and that is what keeps him relevant. In other words, if the media would stop covering every time he steps out the door, his influence would diminish.
All right. It's Steve Winnem. I recognize the voice, former budget director for Charles Buddy Romer. Does Steve have a point about how the media, as much as they say they dislike Mr. Trump in many ways, they certainly have propelled him to being the most famous person on the planet?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's great to hear your voice, my friend Steve. Long time, and we haven't talked in a while. It's good to hear your voice. Hope you're doing well. I think that Steve's right to a certain extent. I mean, I think that the press has to cover him. He's the leading candidate and probably the next nominee for the Republican nomination, and has a decent chance of being the next president of the United States. I can't believe I just said those words, but I think it's true. So they can't not cover him. I think he's also about to be the first president indicted, maybe multiple indictments over the next few weeks. They've got to cover what he says. But I do think that what's what always concerned me was not the fact that they were covering him, what the media was covering him, but how they were covering him. And I think they still have the political media at large still has a ways to go, but they're covering him much more skeptically, much more in a more sophisticated way. But I still think that that Steve's point is well taken, that the press really still does need to do some serious soul searching to find out how they failed in 2015, 2016, mm-hmm. and adjust accordingly for 2024.
Justin in New Orleans. Justin, you're on Talk Louisiana with Bob Mann.
Hey, how you doing today, Bob?
Good morning, Justin.
I'm doing well, also. Thanks for asking. My only question to you is, what do you think a candidate really needs to focus on in order to win over most of the state in a governor's race?
Good question. That is a really good question. And, you know, I think that the real issue in this state is going to be, or maybe the decision that voters are going to have to make, is do we want the next government to be about fighting culture wars, about, you know, attacking libraries, about attacking schools, about making it harder for women to get basic obstetrical care and the basic medical care when and if they're pregnant? Or do we want to create a stronger economy? Do we want to pay workers a fairer wage? Do we want to strengthen our educational institutions instead of weakening them and vilifying them? And I think that probably is going to be a runoff. I mean, I just said a few minutes ago, I don't make predictions, but I think, you know, the smart money probably is on a runoff between Democrat Sean Wilson and a Republican like Jeff Landry. And I think it's going to be a very, very stark choice between two very different visions of the future of this state. And I hope that the voters are wise enough not to choose a culture warrior who will drag us into the past and make Louisiana a pariah state, like I believe states like Florida are becoming. I don't think we want to be a pariah state like Florida. I don't think we want to be a state where people don't want to come because they think their rights are being taken away from them. So I think that's going to be there's going to be a lot of, at a granular level, a lot of very specific issues that we'll get into to discussing. But I think the basic vision of these two candidates, or these two sides, is going to be in very stark relief for voters for the rest of this year.
877-217-5757. We're in the home stretch of Friday Politics Talk Louisiana. Bob Mann is an erudite person who's worked on all sides of the political arena and an untold facet of the 2019 race, when John Bel Edwards beat Eddie Rasponi by 40,000 votes. Is it? Edwards received 784,000 votes, Bob, and of those 784,000, about a half million of those came from black voters. So he may be the only governor in America, I'm sure he is, who got elected with most of his votes, and when I say most, an overwhelming majority of his votes came from black citizens. So why is all this consternation going on about Sean Wilson, who's a black man running for governor? Is it the fact that many people believe he can't get the 284,000 white votes that John Bel Edwards received, or is it just a case in which there is innate prejudice against a black candidate?
Well, I think it's probably a little bit of both. I think that, you know, history argues against it. We've never elected anyone, any black candidate statewide in the history of this state since Reconstruction. And Donald Trump got 60% of the vote in this state just a couple of years
ago. And 85% of the white vote.
And 85, yes, exactly. So, you know, my former boss, John Breaux, used to win statewide elections pretty handily, but he with 95% of the black vote and about 40% of the white vote. John Bel did it with about 30% of the white vote, but it still takes about a third of the white vote to get elected in this state, even if you have all the black votes. And I think the question for somebody like Sean Wilson is, can he get 30% of whites to vote for him? I think it's possible. Is it likely? Maybe not. But we'll have to see how things go.
Right.
I'm certainly hopeful that that he can paint a vision for the future of the state that maybe 25-30% of white voters will embrace. I think it's possible, and I'm really hopeful that he can do that.
Please be concise. We are short on time, and we do have a number of people in line to talk with Bob, so we're going to get to as many as we can. James and Metairie, you're on.
Well, good morning, Jim and Bob. I want to follow up. Bob was talking about this utterly failed effort, this recall effort against New Orleans Mayor LaTwine and Trill. It was a clown show dancing in front of city.
All right, what's your question?
My question is, what did you think about the guy, Rick Farrell, who put in over $1 million to get her out?
All right. There was, of course, a massive effort to do her in. It didn't work. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I guess I'm for when it comes to people like that, I guess I'm glad that they're $1 million poorer today.
Ann on Segan Lane in Baton Rouge. Hi, Ann. You're on with Bob.
Hi, Bob. Thank you for being very concise with all of the things you've said today. I just want to follow up on something you said a little bit earlier. For a population to be afraid of books and not other things like economy and wealth inequality and things like that really put to the state of how just desperate we have become.
I agree. And I think that, you know, I think that most people in the state are actually better than some of these political leaders assume they are. I hope that Jeff Landry is going to find out that people are not quite as retrograde, bigoted, and hostile to education as he hopes they are and expects they are. And I hope that Sean Wilson can paint a more optimistic picture of our state and the future of our state and the people of our state and the potential of the young people of our state that people will embrace and that that people will reject this very negative dragging us into the past that I think that people like Landry are going to lay out.
Patricia in Magnolia Woods in Baton Rouge. Hi, Patricia. You're on with Bob.
Good morning. I know at least one excellent LSU professor went to a Florida university, and I was wondering if DeSantis's, if you think DeSantis's actions will put kind of a chilling effect on recruitment for those universities. Thanks.
Yeah, great question. And I think that's the potential damage to states like Louisiana. So at some level, faculty will go anywhere because if, you know, newly minted faculty, assistant professors who need a job, they'll probably take whatever they can get if it's in Florida or Louisiana. But if you really want to, you know, build a strong university, you got to be also in a position to attract senior people who bring grant money, who bring research dollars with them at a level of full professor, associate professor, tenured. And people like that are probably not looking to go to Florida these days. And so that over time, and maybe very, very quickly, is going to start to really hurt universities in Florida. And on top of that, the people at the senior level are going to start looking to leave because they want to be where they can do their research without the governor telling them that it's forbidden to investigate in this area or that.
All right. We do have a question from Hal in Monroe. He asks a good question about the dynamics of this race 29 weeks out for governor. Does Stephen Waguespack or one of the other Republicans, they have to get past Jeff Landry to make a runoff? Or is there some hope that if another Democrat were to get in that we could have two Republicans in a runoff for governor?
Well, that's possible. I mean, that's clearly possible. And I think that what Sean Wilson has done has been pretty smart. He's really lined up a lot of the Democratic leaders in the state from the governor on down to support him to try to head off the possibility that some prominent Democrat might get in the race. I don't think there's a whole lot of room for that right now, but it's possible. But I think that Sean's really done a good job of solidifying support on the Democratic side so far to try to head that off.
And another listener, this is a quick one. John Alario, Trina Edwards getting married on June 1st in New Orleans, I believe. Will you be attending, Bob Mann?
I will not, but I love John Alario. I mean, I adore that band, and I'm really happy that he's found the love, a new love in his life, and I wish them all the best.
At 79 years old, so God bless him. And Trina's 44, and God bless her, too. Thank you, Bob Mann. Signature support for our program is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Until next time, stay safe and stay tuned.